This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, everybody, this is the Lombardi Line coming to you live on a Thursday as the National Football League turns the page to week two. We've got Thursday night football on tap. The Vikings and Eagles set to go head-to-head later on this evening. Alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We'll also be joined later in the show by VSiN host and professional handicapper Mike Somich, as well as VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, where I am currently broadcasting from, Mike Palm, in Hour 2. Every Thursday, Michael, I am outgunned and outmanned in the name department. Three Michaels and a me. What's going on, my guy?
But on Thursday, you get to announce we are now ready to start the next week, which is the greatest sound of all, right? It's so good. You can start the next week and we can move forward. I'm excited about it. Thursday night football is back in the rotation.
Yep.
You know, we got football Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Means no more murders in the building you need to watch. You're just going to go watch a lot of football.
Yes.
Have you watched that, Stormy?
I did. I haven't seen the latest season, but I watched season one. I like Steve Martin.
I love Steve Martin. Yeah. I love Steve. He's great. Yeah,
it's
really good. It's well done. But anyway, enough of that. Speaking of murders in the building, I just want you to know the big news in Philadelphia. Okay. I don't know if you saw it.
Okay.
They finally captured this prisoner who escaped.
They caught him.
He's been out. They caught him. He was in Delaware County for 14 days almost, and they got him. They had a militia out there. They got him. He was 14 days. He was out there, and he never really moved very far. He was in the same county. But when they got him, he had stolen an Eagle jersey. So they got that off him right away and made sure that, you know, there was nothing there.
Oh, man. What a crazy situation. Well, glad that he's caught.
Was.
Glad that we can move on from it. But my goodness. And I mean, speaking of Philly, natural transition.
That's right.
To tonight's
it's kind
game.
Of ironic, right? Yeah. They capture the guy. He had an Eagle jersey on and we're playing and the Eagles are playing tonight. It's kind of ironic.
Exactly. Eagles at home today, taking on the Minnesota Vikings. And we've seen this line come down. It's been one way traffic largely on Minnesota from 7.5 to now 6. There are some 6.5s out there, including at DraftKings, the total 49 across the board. But this Minnesota team obviously coming off a really disappointing home loss to the Bucks, didn't get long to lick their wounds because it's a quick turnaround on Thursday night. Philadelphia got the win against New England, but at what cost? We have a lot of injuries to let the people at home know about here, Michael. So let's go through them. Their lead running back, Kenneth Gainwell, out with a rib injury. On defense, we know N'Kobe Dean is on injured reserve. He's out with a foot injury. And we talked about this yesterday. He was the green dot player. So the guy that's got the headset on and the helmet, he's doing the calls. That gets thrown over to Reed Blankenship at safety, who is also out in this game. So it looks like, I believe, linebacker Christian Ellis is going to take on that responsibility. Also in the DB room, corner James Bradbury is out in concussion protocol. Defensive tackle Fletcher Cox is questionable, but they believe he is going to go. And then as for the Vikings, their starter at center, Garrett Bradbury, had a lower back injury week one. He's out and questionable. Marcus Davenport on the O-line, even more important at questionable, though. Christian Darrisaw at tackle, one of the better tackles in the league. If he's not available, that's going to be a big loss.
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens when you have the short week, right? You got all these injuries and they creep up. And last year, we really never talked about Philadelphia's injuries at all. They were able to stay healthy pretty much most of the season. But let's talk the green dot, right? So the green dot tells you it's the signal from the coach to the player to coordinate the defense. All right. So shouldn't be that hard. But the problem is now that you're on your third green dot player, and you have a new defense with Sean Dassey as the new defensive coordinator. And it's a different defense than what Gannon played last year. Jonathan Gannon, now the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. It requires a lot of communication. And there can be a lot of mistakes and adjustments. We all watch the tape. We see the players give hand signals, do all that stuff. It can be complex. And when you're in that 25-second zone where things are happening at a rapid pace and motion from here to there, it can become a problem. And last week, if you're objective with watching tape, you sat there and said, this Eagle defense didn't look the same as it did last year, from the front to the back. The front got 60 sacks last year out of 70. They didn't. Hassan Riddick, the Patriots took him out of the game. They doubled him. They tripped him. They did everything they could. And now they've got two new linebackers in there. Christian Ellis, and Zach Cunningham, who was cut by the Titans by way of Houston. So this is going to be a lean group here, and it's going to be a challenge. Now, fortunately, Minnesota's hurt too, but Minnesota's offense can attack, and they will make plays against a very, very inexperienced, and I would suspect not playing to their highest level secondary of the Eagles.
So with that, Michael, as we kind of put this toward the betting thought process here, if you think that the Vikings are going to be able to take advantage of that secondary with the weapons that they have in the pass game, most notably, of course, Justin Jefferson, does that lean toward an over for you? Because I know the Eagles offense didn't quite perform to their peak last week, but they're certainly capable.
Right. That's where I was headed with it. You read my mind. I mean, I think this over, it opened at 48. It got as high as 49.5 in some shops, and now it's sitting right at 49. I do. So 49, we're looking at, you know, a 27-24 game. You hit the over. I think both teams get into the 20s. Look, Philadelphia last week against New England. New England's front gave them some trouble. I think they would be the first to tell you that. And that was the first time in 27 games the Philadelphia Eagles had less than 260 yards. 27 games. So you have to go back to Tampa week six of 2021. So they did a really nice job on them. They didn't give an explosive play up to A.J. Brown. They didn't allow a big run. They couldn't control the pace of the game. And really, New England had every opportunity to win the game. They just didn't do it. They weren't good enough to do it, and credit Philly for that. But Minnesota's offense is better than New England's offense at this point right now. They're going to need to show that they can move the football effectively.
So much is going to be made of Kirk Cousins in primetime today, Michael. And so I did want to make sure that I give the people a little bit of information here. Everybody talks trash about Kirk Cousins in primetime, and it's true. Okay, the numbers are not good, but the majority of them have come on Monday night. And that includes last year when the Vikings lost to the Eagles in Philly, which Elliot and I were talking about this. Is that not weird that they're playing in Philadelphia back-to-back seasons?
Week two again, right? It's really weird.
Week two again, back-to-back seasons in Philly.
I mean, think about Amazon. They start the season off with two playoff teams from last year. One that went to the Super Bowl, the other one that won the North. I mean, that's a pretty good start to the season for them. I can't imagine Al's going to complain about this one, do you?
Well, after last year, he deserves this, okay? Al Michaels needs nice things. But as they go, it's Monday nights, though, that Kirk Cousins has been at his worst. 2-10 for his career on Monday night. But he's actually 9-8 in the other primetime slots, which, drumroll please, includes the last 3 years, Michael, Kirk Cousins being 3-0 on Thursday night football specifically. So hate on Kirk Cousins all you want, but Thursday night has been favorable for him the last couple years.
I mean, look, they did a great job against New England. Remember the Pittsburgh game? I think it was 2 years ago, where they destroyed Pittsburgh in the first half, and then Pittsburgh made that rally with Big Ben. That was a Thursday night game too. So yeah, I'm with you. Look, this is going to come down to, forget the day of the game. Forget who's all
watching.
I
agree. It's just fun information to have. Just fun information.
No, I agree with you. There is something to the Monday night thing. I think there is something to that. It's going to come down to protection. Without Bradbury, without Darrisaw, can they hold up? New England last week had two rookie fourth-round guards start for them. Two. And their right tackle, Calvin Anderson, had played very little in the NFL. He's been around. He actually got cut by New England originally as a college free agent. So, and they held up. A lot of this is going to come down to protection. And then I think Brian Flores, he watched what the Patriots did, what Belichick did to the Eagles. He actually blitzed a few times. He took, you know, he took and made them throw it hot, tackled them, got off the field. Be interesting to see how Brian incorporates that. Now, for fans at home, the Vikings and the Eagles didn't just start preparing for this game on Sunday night. This was one of those you work on in the offseason. You prepare for it during training camp so that your players have a sense that when they get the game plan on Sunday night or Monday morning, you've already done it and you can hit the ground running. And it's all walkthroughs.
I want to ask you about the Eagles running back room, because Kenneth Gainwell, he kind of led the way for them on the ground last year and he's unavailable. But DeAndre Swift, it was very surprising to a lot of people that he was not used. One carry, 3 yards. So I would imagine that he's going to be that staple back tonight, but it's him. You've got Boston Scott. You got Rashad Penny, who wasn't available last week, and he's in there as well. The prop number, I believe, on him is around 34.5 for DeAndre Swift. Does that seem like a number that he could get over?
Well, if he's the main runner, right? If he becomes the main back,
well, and wouldn't you think he should be?
He should be. You know, I mean, Penny, where's Penny in this? Is he not healthy?
He's supposed to play. I know he wasn't active last week, but he should be back.
I mean, I would think Penny would get more. I think they have Swift designated in a certain role. I'm not sure. Look, there's a reason why the Lions traded Swift. And there's a reason there. It could be, and I think it's more medical than it is anything. Mm-hmm. Do we think he's healthy? I mean, he had one run and he had 2 targets and didn't have a catch.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Just 3 yards. It was really, really bizarre to me. And that's just not what I anticipated from him. I think that a lot of fans were excited to have him be brought into that running back room after Miles Sanders moved on to the Carolina Panthers. And that's just not the way that things played out week one. And Nick Sirianni.
What is Hurts rushing record?
Rushing prop number. Let me look it up. I can hit us back with it after the break if I can't find it right now. But let me see.
Let me say this. I don't want to say he didn't run. He had 9 carries. He did.
48.5.
He was protective of himself. And they did a really good job of bottling him up. I don't know if Minnesota can do as well as they did.
Yeah, 48.5, the rushing yards prop for Jalen Hurts coming into tonight. We'll see how he's able to utilize that. We're going to take our first time out of the day. We're just getting started, though, here on the Lombardi Line. Coming up after the break, Aaron Rodgers says he'll rise again following the Achilles injury. And Chris Jones is, quote, pleased and thankful for his new deal. We'll have to discuss it all in News or Noise next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Make this football season your best ever by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Get full access to everything we do, including our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Sign up for a VSiN annual subscription. You'll also get a free copy of our guy Michael Lombardi's new book, Football Done Right. All you got to do is use the promo code Lombardi when you sign up. If you'd like an autographed copy as well, make sure you email us. Subscribe@vsin.com is where you can do it. This is a limited time offer, so sign up today. vsin.com/subscribe.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise.
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. This is noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
All right, Michael, let's do it. News or noise. And we're going to start with your boy, Aaron Rodgers. He took to Instagram yesterday to share his thoughts with fans following the unfortunate and shocking Achilles injury just 4 plays into his Jets debut on Monday Night Football. Said, "I'm completely heartbroken and moving through all of the emotions, but deeply touched and humbled by the support and love." Goes on to say, "The night is darkest before the dawn, and I shall rise again. Proud of my guys, 1-0, which is the Jets record after an inspired win over the Bills, courtesy of 4 Josh Allen touchdowns and a remarkable walk-off punt return touchdown by Xavier Gibson in overtime. News or noise, Michael? Rodgers saying immediately he will rise again.
News. He's going to come back. I mean, he's a competitor. And I mean, I think he realizes, I mean, this guy's gone through most of his career without having injuries, you know, and so this one will take a lot out of him in terms of the rehab required to come back from an Achilles. But, you know, he's got $38 million guaranteed to him next year, whether he comes back or not. And I think he's going to want to come back and play. I think one thing we did see from Aaron Rodgers is he was happy.
Yeah.
He really he was enjoying himself. You could sense it in his smile. You could sense it in his demeanor. And I think because of that, he'll come back.
So I'm interested. I'm going to go back and forth on this with you because I've been thinking a lot over the last 24 hours. And I think what he says here is definitely what we all expected him to say immediately, right? Because you have the immediacy of the reaction, the happiness that you just referenced, and the way that he's just been rejuvenated and energized out there in New York. But after all that he has put into this team, I understand why he would feel that way now. But the hard work is just about to begin. And at his age, going to be 40 years old, going into 41 next season if he were to come back. Like, this is an injury that's hard for young guys to come back from, let alone somebody at his age.
Yeah.
And so
it really is.
I just question how much being able to say this right now is actually going to bear on what really happens down the line when he realizes how tough it is to come back from something like this.
Well, I think once he steps into it, I think he's going to know. I mean, they're going to tell him what he has to do to get out, you know, how he's going to have to come back. I think a lot of it's going to come from, I don't know when usually they can do the procedure fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. So how the procedure goes, and, you know, I'm sure they'll tell him, hey, you know, it went really well. We didn't have a problem. Exactly what we thought it was, and they'll get it going. But I do think he's a competitor enough to want to do what he has to do to come back. And I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah, it's just I think back to this just this past offseason when he was going through everything with the Packers and deciding what he wanted to do as it pertained to football, period, if he wanted to come back. So he did say it's always darkest before the dawn. Maybe he hits that darkness retreat one more time to help him make his final decision. Let's move on to our next headline, though. Chief star defensive tackle Chris Jones has a new restructured incentive-based one-year deal with Kansas City worth up to $25 million. The deal, in theory, will help him recoup the estimated $3.5 million that he has lost through fines and that opening game check, and a little bit more. Here's his thoughts on the contract.
I'm super pleased with how it turned out. You know, I'm back in the building. I'm excited to be back. Thankful for the organization. They was able to boost my salary up to make up for the fines and everything. I'm super grateful for that. Hopefully we can get something worked out after the year for long term. I reiterated multiple times, I plan to play for the Kansas City Chiefs for the long haul of my career. That doesn't change because of this, the past situation. And we focus on Jacksonville, man. Focus on Jacksonville.
News or noise, Michael? I mean, the fact, are we just going to go through this saga all over again? Because that's what I feel like might happen next year.
Oh, there's no question. Well, first of all, they're not going to franchise him next year. It's $34 million. Mm. So he's going to be a free agent. And I don't know. I mean, I know they want to keep him. But, you know, the problem is it's one thing to keep him. It's another thing. What's it cost to keep him? You know, is it going to cost $40 million, $35? Is he going to, what contract is he going to want? And then how do they keep him? That's the bigger issue. I mean, look, everybody's going to want the guy. Everybody wants him. He's a great player, but it's hard to keep him on that salary. Then they can't franchise him. They can't protect their rights because his salary is so high, it goes up. And, you know, the Chiefs did him a solid. There's no question. They gave him a chance to earn $2 million of the $3.1 million in fines back. They didn't have to do that. They did not have to do that. And they had to redo Joe Tooney's contract so they could make this happen. They guaranteed Joe Tooney's paragraph 5, which lowered his cap number, which then allowed them to count these likely to be earned incentives that are in Chris Jones's contract, that if he plays 30% and 50%, he will get, because they counted as earned on the cap because he did it last year.
I just feel like if he was going to really hold out and he was making the stink that he was, that he shouldn't have given up so quickly. And now this is what you settle for. And it's not Aaron Donald money. It's not Nick Bosa money. It's just a restructured 1 year deal. And who knows what's going to happen from a health standpoint from you this year. It just seemed like an odd thing for me that he said that he was pleased and thankful for the way that things turned out when all of this seems a little bit self-inflicted based on what he said that he wanted from his contract. One guy that did get a contract this offseason, Daniel Jones. He was sacked 7 times in the Cowboys blowout win over the Giants this past Sunday. And Micah Parsons, despite being famous in the league for making some of those hits, didn't agree with the team leaving him in. Take a listen.
It's called protecting your guy. You know, something I thought the Giants should have done. I don't think Daniel Jones should have been in that game in the fourth quarter. I thought they should have protected him and pulled him out. And barring injury, their season will be over without Daniel Jones. The Bengals did the smart decision by pulling Joe Burrow, saying, hey, we're going to submit. We're going to take our loss and we're going to move on to next week and get better. That's the best thing you can do. I do not agree with Daniel Jones staying out there into that last drive.
That soundbite compliments of The Edge with Micah Parsons podcast. News or noise, Michael?
I think it's news. I mean, he's right. What were they gaining? It's the same thing we argued about last year with Mike Williams. What was he doing out there at the end of that Bronco game when the game was sealed and really it had no bearing on the game against Jacksonville the next week, which was a playoff game? We got to be smarter than that. Like, I mean, look, Tyrod Taylor, if he goes out there, he might get hurt. But, you know, if Tyrod Taylor gets out there, Micah's right. They're not going to win any games anyway. I don't want Tyrod to get hurt. Don't confuse that. But I think, it was time to retreat. There's sometimes you just need to step back and, let's go on to next week. Yep. And I think the time was in the fourth quarter. Let's go on to next week. Like, what were they going to gain out of that?
Well, if you ask Brian Daboll, he said they were trying to, quote, get something positive going and that Jones wanted to stay in. So there wasn't a conversation about it. And I think in that instance, we talk about this all the time with guys that have injuries coming back into a game. Just you got to save the player from themselves sometimes. I think in that situation, yeah, you're 100% right. There's no need to put him at risk. He's your $40 million man.
Like what players, like if it's just, let's play this through. Say Daniel Jones said he wanted to come out. You say, see, you're not a competitor. You're quitting. Like, so when you ask him that question, what answer do you think you're going to get?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what answer do you think you're going to get? Like, you're the leader of the team. He doesn't make those decisions. You do. I would tell the same thing to Brian. Brian, get him out of there. You think you got to think past it. We're not getting anything going today. We complete one out. You think that's going to rejuvenate us for next week? Of course not.
He completed 15 to 28 passes in the loss, two picks, and was harassed by that group up front. You look at some of the pressure numbers, pressured on 55% of the 42 dropbacks in what was eventually the worst season opening loss in franchise history for the New York Giants. Yet, Michael, because of you and our conversation yesterday, I'm contemplating backing this team next week for Survivor. So, my mind's in shambles, clearly.
Well, I think that what your options are Buffalo, which, again, is a good option. I don't disagree with you there. What are your other options?
I don't want to take the San Francisco 49ers because I don't trust the division matchups, and the Rams actually looked like pretty decent. I'm still going through things, but after our conversation yesterday, I was driving home, and I could not stop racking my brain. Like, do I like the Giants now? I don't want to like the Giants. I don't trust the Giants. The Cardinals played tough. They did show a little bit of oomph, but I might do it. I might do it. I texted my dad this morning. I was like, could we pull the trigger on the Giants? We'll see. We'll discuss this a little bit later when we have Mike Palm on the program. But first, it's Mike Somich, VSiN host, professional handicapper, drops by next. We're going to talk some NFL and college football. Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get rewarded before you ever place a bet with the GBank Visa Signature Card. Unlike other credit cards that decline sports betting transactions or treat them as a cash advance, the GBank Visa Signature Card can load directly to your favorite sportsbook apps. You'll earn a 1% cash rewards on gaming and sports app loads every time and 2% on other purchases. GBank Visa, a card designed for gaming and sports fans everywhere, works with apps like DraftKings, BetMGM, and Caesars. To learn more, go to g.bank/VSIN. That's g.bank/VSIN. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you, and excited to push our NFL and now college football conversation forward with our guy Mike Somich, professional handicapper and VSiN host of The Handle alongside Matt Brown. Weekends, new time, by the way, 4 to 7 Pacific, 7 to 10 Eastern. He's at SomBomb18 on X. Welcome in, Mike. How are you today?
Doing great. I'm excited. Tuesdays and Wednesdays each week of football are just brutal right now because we don't have any college football going on. So Thursdays are just like Christmas morning every week right now. We got a couple college games. We got a great NFL game tonight, and we just roll into this week.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I feel like we've got some positive vibes.
I like Tuesdays and Wednesdays, though. Mike, I need time to regroup and get organized, as Al Davis would say. I got to figure out all these ratings and do all this stuff. I need the extra time to prepare. That's the only good thing about Tuesdays and Wednesdays for me.
Well, what makes me even more excited, sorry, on this Thursday was just, Samaj, I looked at some of your plays, things that you're interested in today, and for tonight's Thursday night game with the Vikings and Eagles, you like the over. We talked about it in the first block. That's a lean that we have as well in this game. What do you like about it?
Yeah, I don't generally go toward overs in these primetime matchups, but with the injuries you see on the Philadelphia defense, I think that's a good look tonight. The line moved here from 8 down to 6 yesterday, all based on the injury report. We're going to be missing multiple key pieces in that Philadelphia secondary. We saw them give up 20 to New England, but it could have been significantly more than 20 points in that game. New England successfully moved the ball up and down the field. You flip to the other side and you just look at the week 2 matchup last year. Philadelphia moved the ball very easily against this Vikings defense, which is very similar to what it was last year. I don't think Philadelphia has a problem getting into the high 20s here. And then the big question is, can Minnesota get to 21 to 24 and be able to send this thing over? I realize people pause about Kirk Cousins on primetime games, but to me, this offense is better than New England's. You've got weapons on the outside. You've got a weaker secondary. The one question mark here for the Vikings is this offensive line and what they're going to look like against a very good Philadelphia pass rush. But it feels like this Minnesota team should be able to put up 21, 24 points. And if they put up something in those low 20s, I think this one flies over tonight.
Mike, were you a little disappointed? I was. Philly's defense, now I know they're missing Bradbury. They're going to miss Blankenship. They're going to miss Dean. Philly's defense didn't look the same to me as it did last year. Your thoughts?
It did not. I was expecting a lot more, especially against a New England offense who I expected with Bill O'Brien coming in to take a couple weeks to really see them rolling. You don't have a ton of playmakers on the outside. Stevenson's good running back, but he's not great. I mean, the pieces are just not wonderful up there in New England. I was expecting you were going to see them hold New England to the teens, and the points New England scored weren't all off turnovers. They weren't short fields. This was a team that drove the ball successfully against that Philadelphia team multiple times in that game. I was expecting more out of Philly, and I was expecting more out of the pass rush. I realized that you saw a wonderful game out of Carter, but you didn't have that pressure consistently on Mac Jones that I was expecting. And so I downgraded the Philly defense a little bit, mostly because of injuries, but it'd be interesting to see if they can get back to that point last year. And one thing with the Philly defense last year is they were in great spots all season. They got out to early leads. It was a lot easier for them to play defense with a 14, 21 point lead at half. That's something we got to watch this year because I don't think they're going to be able to jump out in as many games early.
And it is crazy to think about how healthy that group stayed all season long and now dealing with what they're dealing with right out the gate here to start things off. One-way traffic so far with bettors on Minnesota. That thing went from 7.5 now to largely 6 everywhere that we're looking around. Let's keep it going. Ahead to the weekend and beyond slate, the Steelers are getting 2.5 against the Browns. This is a game where they were favored before last weekend's results when they got pummeled by my San Francisco 49ers, which I'm not mad at. I'm just saying. But you like them to rebound this week, maybe Mike Tomlin getting that group motivated after the tough loss.
I do. This to me was the biggest overreaction from week one. You had one team in the Browns who looked very good, but Joe Burrow was not Joe Burrow in that game. You could tell he had missed the practice time. The weather made it a little more difficult for that offense to consistently move the ball. I think this is going to be a good Cleveland defense, but I feel like that was probably a little bit over expectation for what we can expect from Cleveland all season long. You flip over to the other side, Pittsburgh got absolutely smacked in the mouth by San Francisco early and never could really recover from that. Kenny Pickett just looked a little bit off. His throws weren't as accurate as we'd seen late in the season last year and in the preseason this year. Because of that, we've seen this line shift almost a full 4 points. It's just an overreaction to me here. I don't think there should be this big of a gap, especially on a Monday night, especially in a divisional matchup. The value to me here is Pittsburgh plus the 2.5.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, that Pittsburgh, the one thing I think one of the things that helps a coach is when his team plays as poorly as he did, as they did, they have their full attention. And Browns week is big in Pittsburgh. There's no question. How about the Panthers and the Saints? I mean, I thought the Saints were fortunate to beat Tennessee. A lot of help from the officiating crew last week. The Panthers offense, two new starting guards. Well, one this week. They had one last week. Their offense, maybe they'll get DJ Chark back. You like the under here.
I do like the under. If we ever get Saints minus 2.5, I'm probably going to play a little Saints here too. But the under is my best bet of the week. I bet it on Sunday when the totals came out. It was 41 there. It's been bet down a little bit. You can still get it at under 40. I would still take it at under 40. To me, this Carolina team is just a dead under team all season. We saw them really struggle in the preseason offensively. Week one against Atlanta, they looked atrocious. Young does not look comfortable in there. They're not able to push the ball down the field, so you're not seeing any big plays from them. And you flip over to this New Orleans side, a defense that I think is going to be right around average, should be able to hold Carolina down. And I just don't see the explosiveness, especially before you get Alvin Kamara in here. I don't think you're going to see New Orleans come in here and take a ton of chances. And then the cherry on the top for me, they announced the referees for this game. Scott Novak going to be your lead referee. He is one of the highest percentages at calling penalties on home teams in the last 2 years. Last year specifically, the under went 11-5 in games that Novak refereed specifically because of the home penalties. If Carolina gets penalties called on them, and then you've got that crowd going nuts when New Orleans is on defense, to me, that points even more to an under here. So love the under 40 in this spot.
Mike, Stormy, I want to interject. Scott Novak's Mike Palm's and I's favorite official in the league. And whatever game he does, I went through it this morning. I crossed that game off my list. That game is, you cannot handicap that game with Scott Novak. You just take it right off your list, right? You can do somebody else. You can maneuver all that. Scott Novak, he is convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt. People are paying to see him referee the game, and he's going to give him a show.
Your Raiders
so
are
now
showing,
he's got
Michael.
A national audience. He's got a national audience on Monday night. Oh, can me?
I can't
wait for all the holding calls, Michael.
I think we should have a prop bet on how long into the game Scott Novak calls his first penalty. It'll be on the kickoff.
Oh, man. I'm gonna have my phone at the ready to text you, Michael. Don't you worry. Let's turn our attention from the NFL to college football, though. You are laying a big number against my alma mater here, Mike Somich. And I've got to tell you, I am not mad at you. I think this Oregon State team is the real deal. They're a 24.5-point favorite against San Diego State and a former safety who is playing quarterback for my Aztecs.
Yeah, not great when you got a former safety playing QB for the offense. And this is an Aztecs team that struggled to score all season long. I didn't think that win week one versus Ohio was legit. They played a D2 team close week two. I had laid the 14 last week with UCLA. I was never in doubt. This Oregon State team is very, very good. I think people are sleeping on them a little bit here. Two very good running backs, very good defense. I don't think DJU is the problem in Clemson either on the offense after what we've seen this year. So I think you got a pretty good quarterback in there as well. I'm happy to lay the 24.5 here with against an Aztecs team that I would be surprised if they get to 10 in this spot. And this Oregon State offense, even with a lead, continues to put points up because it's a run first power running game offense that's able to throw off play action. To me, Oregon State is going to be able to blow out the Aztecs on Saturday. And I like the look of Oregon State at 13 or 12-1, depending on where you're shopping, to win the Pac-12 as well. They have a favorable schedule. They don't have USC. Their four toughest games, three of the four are at home. The last in the schedule is Oregon on the road. I think they may be undefeated going into that Oregon game, guaranteeing them a spot in that Pac-12 title game. And if you have one of the two teams in the Pac-12 title game at 12-1, there's an easy opportunity to make some money off it. So I'm all in on this Oregon State Beavers team.
Real quick, we got LSU, Mississippi State. Mississippi State was fortunate to beat Arizona last week. They really got lucky in that one. Arizona turned the ball over five times and had the game into overtime. You like LSU laying the 9.5.
I do like LSU in this spot. Mississippi State, what they try and do is beat you via the run game. They only threw the ball 17 times last week. They don't throw the ball downfield at all. The way to beat LSU is to push the ball downfield with big receivers. That's what we saw against that Florida State game. I don't think Mississippi State is going to be able to really target this LSU secondary. And LSU is going to be able to put some points up. That Arizona game was not good at all for Mississippi State. I think this is a spot where this number should be closer to the 14 versus the 10. So I was happy to lay the 9.5 here with LSU.
Great stuff. Thanks, buddy.
Have a good one. Enjoy the weekend.
That's our guy, Mike Somich.
Thank you, Mike.
Make sure you check him out every weekend evening, 4 to 7 Pacific, 7 to 10 Eastern on The Handle alongside Matt Brown here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Now, when we come back, for better or worse, there were a number of stunning results in the NFL last week. Will it be a different game or more of the same for these teams? We will cover it all in a moment.
We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Football is back in full swing, and we've got another week of epic games ahead. Who's got you covered for the action of every single one of them? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet $5 on football and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Get in on the NFL Week 2 action with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the app now and use the code VEGAS to sign up. New customers bet just $5 to take home $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook. Use that code VEGAS, VEGAS. The crown is yours. Now, there were a number of teams in week one of this NFL season that had performances that's let's say they hit the extreme of the spectrum, right? Teams looked really, really bad, some of which were unexpectedly bad, and some teams looked really out of this world good, Michael. So what we're going to try to do here is figure out whether or not we think that's how things are going to move forward here in week two. We're calling it different game or more of the same. And I want to start with the Miami Dolphins, who were remarkable on offense. Tua Tagovailoa, 466 passing yards. Tyreek Hill, over 200. Monster days for both of them en route to a win over the Los Angeles Chargers. Do you think we get a different game or more of the same for this Miami team as they take on the New England Patriots and a very stout defense this week?
Well, last year they held the Dolphins to 20 points a game. They held them to 40 points. Last year, Tyreek Hill had 19 targets. He had 12 catches. He had averaged 12 yards a catch. I don't think, you know, New England's going to do what the Chargers tried to do, play man coverage from off coverage and try to run with them. I think it'll be a different game. You know, Miami has given New England trouble. They beat them in the opening game last year, but really New England's offense contributed to that loss. They turned the ball over. New England held them to 10 points, taking away the turnover points that they were able to accumulate. They converted a 4th-and-7 inside to Gesicki. That was a huge play in the game at the start. And then New England beat them in New England last year in a close game. They won the fourth quarter, but I don't think it's going to be more of the same. How could it be? Those are record numbers. You're not going to be able to duplicate that, especially against a good defense and a really good coach.
You mentioned some of the success that Miami has had. I will say the numbers in front of me, too, has won 4 straight against Bill Belichick. Miami as a team also covered in 5 straight against the Patriots. Just a 3-point spread in this game. New England getting 3 in this spot. Total 47.
I think it's the first time New England's been the dog, though. They've always been the favorite. Maybe they were the dog down in Miami last year. They won 20-10, so they did cover that. Yeah.
I want to get your opinion on the total here, because well, I understand what you're saying, that the defense is going to be a completely different animal than what we saw last week in that paper-thin group from the Chargers. But it's still, like, there are things about this offense where I feel like they'll get theirs in certain instances. Like, Tyreek Hill is still Tyreek Hill, and he'll be able to make his plays. And I fear that Mac Jones in that group, just week two under Bill O'Brien and still working out some of the kinks offensively, that I don't know if they'll be able to go blow for blow with Miami. Do you have any thoughts on that total?
Well, last week, see, here's what I think people have to understand why you can't go from 1 week to the next. Last week, against the Chargers, Miami chose to play too high safety, which is what Vic likes to do, Vic Fangio. And so that encouraged the Chargers to run the ball. They're one man short in the box. And the Chargers ran the ball effectively. They had the big run from Eckler. I don't know if he'll want to try to play that. He'll play the too high look and come down, because the Patriots will run the ball and they'll be able to move the football if they do. It'll put the pressure off of Mac Jones. I do think New England's offense needs to get, again, they have injuries. Trent Brown didn't practice today. Their other guard, So, who was in the starting right guard, he was out. They have 2 players out with concussions. Now, they may get Cole Strange back at left guard. That could help. But once again, who's playing left tackle for him? Tyrone Wheatley? That could be a problem. So, again, this New England offensive line, it keeps creeping up with issues. And against Miami, which has a good rush, Phillips and Chubb, and they got Wilkins inside and Zeitler, you know, they can be physical and rush the passer. We saw that against the Chargers when they had to throw the football. So I think the Chargers will play better defense. I think this could be a game 21-20, 24-20. I think it's going to be in there. I would suspect the under to play. If the over hits, I don't know if the Patriots can keep pace with that.
I feel pretty similarly as it pertains to that number. I think it might lend a little bit more to an under than it seems like on the surface. You mentioned Austin Eckler there. He did not practice yesterday. Questions about his status moving forward looks unlikely. Potential, they're saying it could be a high ankle sprain. Haven't seen anything definitive yet. The Chargers are at Tennessee this week as a 3-point favorite, total 45.5. And obviously, we just talked so much about the success that the offense was able to have for Miami against them. More of the same or a different game here against the Titans?
Well, look, let's go back last year. This is an interesting game for me because I've spent a lot of time working on it. Last year in Los Angeles, the Chargers won 14-10. That was a game where Ryan Tannehill was in and out of the game with injuries. He threw an interception, got sacked 4 times. They didn't have a lot of their good players. They especially didn't have any of their skill players on offense. That was a big issue for the Titans. And the Titans had a lead in the game going into the fourth, and the Chargers scored 14 points, 10 points in the fourth quarter to win the game and put the game away. So I think this will be a close game. I'm surprised no one's moving on the Titans being a home dog at 3. Last week, they struggled, and they were in the red zone quite a bit. And their physicality, I think Henry will run the ball effectively against the Chargers. And they have moved the ball. And Vrabel has done a nice job of stopping Joystick, my man Kellen Moore. Last year he went in there with Dallas, and they did a nice job, even though they didn't have all their players. They had Joshua Dobbs playing quarterback. I'd be surprised if the Titans didn't upset them here. I think the Titans are a good play. I think the Chargers' defense is a little bit of a it's going to be this inconsistent because the way they play.
Plus 125 on the money line price for Tennessee if you think the Chargers are going to open up this season falling 0-2. Let's go to Josh Allen. We all saw what happened on Monday Night Football. He had 3 interceptions, the fumble lost, 4 turnovers, pushing his total in his career to 84, the most in the NFL since he has entered the league. As his Bills get set to host the Raiders this week, from Josh Allen specifically, different game or more of the same from QB1?
Oh, I think it'll be a different game. I think they saw Denver run the football effectively against the Raiders at times in the game. I think they feel like they can control the pace of the game and take some of the burden off. I think this will be a game for Cook to run the football, and I think they'll try to make it so that Josh has a lot of success in terms of give him some easy throws. The Raiders will play some zone, and they'll just got to try to get him to not force the ball into Stephon Diggs and try to throw the ball to the other team. I expect a different game out of Josh Allen. Do I expect a 300-yard passing game? I don't think they're going to need that against the Raiders. I think they're going to need to be able to be effective and efficient.
Buffalo is a big favorite in this game, laying 8.5 at home, but it is down from 9.5. People, though, thinking that Josh Allen should bounce back, in agreement with you there. How about these Dallas Cowboys? How about them Cowboys? Put up a 40-0 spot on the Giants last week out there in New York. No points allowed, 171 total yards allowed, 7 sacks, 2 picks. They were doing it in all areas. I know it was a statement game out the gate week 1, but moving ahead now, facing a Jets team and beyond, you think different game or more of the same from this Dallas team? Can they keep it going moving forward?
I want to think different game, and it was one of the games that I wanted to talk about as one of my plays for the week. But, and I had it on a consideration list in terms of a lean. But the more I think about it, bad lines don't travel. And that's always been my mantra. And now you're going into Dallas with a bad offensive line against a really good defensive front. And they know the quarterback is limited, and they're not going to want to do much with him. They're going to want to run screens. They're going to run some easy spacing plays to try to get him to handle it. And I'm not sure that that's going to be able to allow them to be very explosive on offense. I think they'll play it very close to the vest. But I also think Dallas will play it close to the vest, too. I think one of the things, when you go over the last 7 games of the Jets season last year, they only forced 2 turnovers. A lot of that was because the other team wasn't trying to force the issue. The other team realized, if we don't mess this up, we got a chance to win the game 13-10. The only way we lose is if we turn it over like Buffalo did. So that's why the under keeps coming way down in this game. For a 9.5-point spread, we got a 38.5 under.
That's what I keep staring at. Near double-digit spread here in the total, just 38.5. We only have 30 seconds, Michael, but real quickly, Joe Burrow, more of the same or a different game for him moving forward?
You'll get a different game. This Ravens secondary is beat up right now. Yeah. I mean, this is the perfect time for him. I want to take the Bengals because the Ravens are a wounded team right now, offensively and defensively.
Just 82 yards from Joe Burrow, 14 of 31 passing in the 24-3 loss. But I think we also saw the weather was terrible in Cleveland. The offensive line, which also is supposed to be the best that he's had so far while he's been there with Cincinnati, didn't really show their stuff. No. So hopefully they can kind of get a lot of different things together. When we return for hour two, we got a number of injuries for this Thursday night football contest. We'll get you the latest there. And Aaron Rodgers says he will rise again after his season-ending Achilles injury. But could that be too tall of a task for the oldest player in the NFL? We'll dissect it all here on VSiN.